Our next speaker is coming up. Jerry Whitaker is the Vice President for Standards Development at the ATSC. And in that capacity, he supports the work of the various ATSC technology and specialist groups and assists in the development of ATSC standards and related documents. He currently serves as Secretary of the Technology and Standards Group and Secretary of the Technology Group on ATSC 3.0 and is closely involved in work relating to educational programs. Jerry's a fellow of the SBE and a fellow of SMPTE. He served as a board member and vice president of the SBE and has authored or edited more than 35 books on technical topics, including the NAB Engineering Handbook, 9th edition. I've known him for about 35 years, I think. Quite a bit, big chunk of my career we've been friends, and I'd like everyone to welcome Jerry Whitaker.
Thanks, Keith, and good morning, everybody. I'm very happy to be back here in Madison for the Broadcasters Clinic. I've had the good fortune to do a number of these presentations over the years and collect yet more frequent flyer or frequent presenter points. And beautiful weather. I understand we have Linda Bond to thank for that. She has that kind of power, and we appreciate it. So let's get started. There we go. Okay. So today I want to talk about ATSC 3.0. When I was here, I think 2 years ago, ATSC 3.0 was very much in its infancy. And we have made an incredible amount of progress between then and now. And I want to review some of the work that's been accomplished and the road that we have yet to travel. There's a lot to cover here, and so I'll blow through some of the slides pretty quickly, but you'll have them as backup. The key points I want to make are with regard to where standardization is in the process and what documents are available now and what will be coming up in the next few months. So if you're not familiar with the Advanced Television Systems Committee, if you are, please bear with me. The ATSC's mission is to create and foster implementation of voluntary standards, recommended practices to advance digital terrestrial broadcasting, and to facilitate interoperability with other media. Now, ATSC has been around for 32 years, having been formed in 1983 by CEA, IEEE, NAB, NCTA, and SMPTE, all still members. ATSC is an open due process organization. We have about 150 members, and the breadth of the membership is critical to what we do because we're involved in a lot of disciplines, and so we need to have all of those constituencies at the table, and that includes broadcasters, broadcast equipment vendors, cable and satellite systems, consumer electronics and semiconductor manufacturers, universities, and other organizations. The logos, many of these logos look familiar to you, I'm sure, and there are yet more. Not to spend too much time on the ATSC inside baseball stuff, but I want to point out that there are three main operating groups, if you will, within the ATSC. The implementation team, which as you can see here, there are two implementation teams, and the concept there is pretty simple. We have a technology, we have a standard, and the implementation team will focus on getting field experience, doing demonstrations, thinking about, okay, what else do we need in this standard or this suite of standards? And right now we have two implementation teams. One is focused on personalization and interactivity, and the other is advanced emergency alerting. Technology group one, whoops, this is the one I wanted. Technology group one is the essentially the legacy, the A53, if you will, technology-focused organization. It continues, the groups continue to meet. There is ongoing maintenance work on A53 and A65 and A85 and all the other documents that if you're involved in digital television, you know. What I'm going to do today, though, is focus on Technology Group 3. There again, we have a number of specialist groups that focus on specific areas. We'll get into those in due time. Oh, look, it's time. I will spare you the fascinating look at the groups and ad hoc groups and working groups and small groups and authoring groups. But here's the main structure. The point I want to make by this slide is that there are hundreds of individuals from 150 companies that are involved in work in ATSC 3.0. And it's truly amazing. It's not simply a North American or certainly not specifically US-centric operation. There's a considerable involvement and support from Asia, from Europe, and elsewhere. So it's a big effort. The broadcast industry paradigm has worked quite well for us for a very long time. Of course, it's based on the use of a common open standard, where the industry gets together, decides upon a standard, a technical standard, and it's eventually approved by the regulatory agency. And then broadcast equipment manufacturers build to that standard, broadcasters transmit to that standard, and CE manufacturers build receivers that are capable of decoding those emitted signals. And so consumers get television in their homes and everybody's happy. And the core of that, of course, was pioneered, if you will, by NTSC, which has a remarkable 60-year lifetime. All standards should be so successful. Of course, it's still on the air. It's not gone entirely. No surprise here, NTSC, of course, is 6 megahertz channel, where the channel number is the brand. A single program, a single video program with audio, maybe SAP, probably stereo, and closed captioning. Well, enter ATSC 1.0, which was a revolution when it was introduced in 1993, when you consider that the technologies, the hot technologies of the day, of course, every television set had a CRT. I mean, every television set. And smartphones. Phones were phones. And the IBM PC was the latest technology. Or is that an XT? I think it's an XT. At any rate, when A53 was approved in 95, it brought with it, and the related documents that came shortly thereafter, it brought high-definition video, multicast capabilities, surround sound, enhanced closed captioning, extensibility, and mobile digital television, which was added in 2009. Now, we're talking about 95, 93, 95, and here we are in 2015. A lot has happened in the intervening years, and the competitive landscape has shifted. For example, cable modems can offer greater than 150 megabits per second to consumers, if you're willing to pay for it, and a lot of people are. Wi-Fi, which started out at 11 megabits per second, is now up to 1,300. 4G networks are capable of 12 megabits per second. Smart connected TVs are commonplace. 4K UHD displays, while not commonplace, are certainly in the market and are selling very well. So the competitive landscape has changed. And so in order for broadcasters to keep up, we need a new system. The requirements of that system would be a flexible, robust transmission system with greater capacity and the ability to trade off robustness for bits. We also want integrated mobile capabilities, not as an add-on, but integral to the system. Of course, advanced audio video coding systems that would include ultra high definition video and immersive and personalized audio, and again, extensibility. at an even greater level of extensibility than we had have with ATSC 1.0. So what is the goal of ATSC 3.0? Well, it's to improve the television viewing experience, and that's that experience, that consumer element, has to be the focus of our work because they are the ultimate customer. We want to add value to broadcasting's service platform by extending the reach and adding the possibility for new business models. I was chatting earlier with a gentleman who, you know, we discussed, you look in the future 10 years from now, what will the broadcast business look like? Well, it probably won't look like it is today. and the business part of it is as important as the regulatory part and even the technical part, but it begins with the technical part. So we want to higher video and audio quality. We don't want to be in the position, broadcasters I don't think want to be in the position where you can get better video quality off of Netflix than you can off of a local station. Personalization and interactivity, we want to address those changing consumer behaviors, all without the challenge, the requirement of backward compatibility. Of course, that's a two-pronged sword. I don't need to point that out too much. It's pretty obvious. So the key is we've got to make this, and I get to this, I'll slip to the bottom of this slide. Because the system is not backward compatible, it must provide significant performance improvements in the new services. This has to be a pull prospect. So the technology, the product is so good that consumers want it, because we can't push it on them, but we want them to pull it in. So how would an advance like this be possible? Well, of course, advances in video compression are well known, MPEG-2 to AVC to MPEG-HEVC, each one relatively a 2x improvement, depending on how you count it. Of course, audio has seen similar improvements from AC3 to AAC to object-based audio. So again, focusing on the consumers, the benefits for the consumer is to maintain a competitive top-tier picture and sound quality. We want to reach new consumer devices and new consumers. We want to be flexible and efficient in the use of the spectrum. It would also be very nice if we could have a common world standard. Now that's a bit of a reach. It has been talked about in the past, probably not seriously, because we've managed for analog and then for digital to invent several ways of doing kind of the same thing, all for good reason, mind you. But if we can have a system, we in ATSC can design a system that incorporates and understands the needs of a lot of different regions and constituencies, then there may be a possibility where there's kind of a base system that's used in a lot of places with regional differences as required. FOB TV, the Future of Broadcast Television Initiative, has been working toward that goal for some years, and their members are involved, many, maybe even most, of their members are involved in work on ATSC 3.0, so they're looking at it closely. Okay, so ATSC 3.0 is going to be built to last. I mean, that's a concept from the beginning. However, technology changes. It's changed in the last 20 years, and it's going to change in the next 20 years. We don't know where it's going to go, but we want to build in the hooks, the capabilities to evolve that system to bring in new technologies, to signal when a layer or components of a layer evolve. We want to signal minor version changes and major version changes. And the whole goal, of course, is to avoid disruptive transitions. Moore's Law, the chart here, this hasn't been updated in a while, but the arc of that line hasn't changed much. At some point, I'm sure it will flatten out, but we don't know when that's going to happen. So here's the ATSC 3.0 elevator pitch. The next generation broadcast television system will offer significantly higher data capacity, flexible spectrum use, higher physical layer robustness, future extensibility, mobile handheld support, hybrid broadcast plus broadband, we'll get to that in a minute, and advanced audio video compression. There's a saying I've heard, I'm not sure it should be who it should be attributed to, but it goes something like, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Some in the room know that that's often the quoted quote from Joe Flaherty. It's all attributed to Joe Flaherty. With that in mind, before the first words were written in working draft documents on ATSC 3.0, a group of smart people sat down to decide and to define what are the use cases, what are the requirements, and then we'll build toward those. And the basic ATSC 3.0 use cases involve, or include rather, flexible use of the spectrum, robustness, mobile services, UHD video, hybrid services, multi-view, multi-screen, not just second screen, but multi-screen, if you can believe that. Firstly, I'm focused on one screen. There are people, my children involved, included, who have two screens, and there are even people who have more than two screens going at the same time. Okay, so we want to support them. Also 3D content, enhanced and immersive audio, advanced accessibility, advanced emergency alerting, personalization and interactivity, advanced advertising, and common world standards. So those are the basic use cases. This takes those use cases, those requirements, and divides them into the specialist groups that are responsible for the work. And again, with apologies for the inside baseball stuff, you'll hear references, if you talk to anybody about ATSC 3.0, you hear references to specialist groups, S33, S34, and so forth. It's unavoidable. We just have to accept it. So let me go through this slide quickly. The S31 is involved in the program management, if you will, and kind of has an overview of the whole process. Beginning from the physical layer, S32 was involved in sending the bits over the channel. S33, management and protocols, takes those bits and organizes them into streams and packets. S34 is applications and presentation, software, pictures, sound. And S36 is security, service protection. So the system and requirement and program management function are important in any large project, of course. S31 has that responsibility. Skip Peasy, who spoke a couple of days ago here from NAB, is the chair of that group. S31 developed the requirements and usage scenarios. That work has been completed, although there's ongoing maintenance work, if you will, regarding requirements. S31 essentially keeps the big picture in mind. One of the things they're going to do is to verify fulfillment of requirements. We have a set of requirements, and we've written documents or are writing document standards to address those requirements. When that document authoring process is completed, or nearly so, S31 will go back and make sure that we actually accomplished what we set out to do, and that's the verification. So, I'm required by law to tell you this, that's not really true, but I need to point out that specialist groups and ad hoc groups have made preliminary decisions to select technologies for incorporation in ATSC. Those selections of technologies are subject to approval of TG3 and ultimately the voting membership in accordance with ATSC processes. Other disclaimers I can bring up, your mileage may vary. Past performance is not indicative of future returns and use only as directed. Having done the disclaimer, this takes the previous specialist group focused chart and turns it into a system layer focused chart. At the fundamental, I wouldn't call it the bottom, certainly, it's the fundamental, it's the foundation part of ATSC 3.0 is system discovery and signaling. Above that is the transmission physical layer, and then protocols and presentation and applications. And then security touches several of those points. The physical layer encompasses common system elements, the bootstrap signaling, that was the bottom block on the previous drawing. Modulation encoding, waveforms, as you'd expect. TG3S32 is chaired by Luke Fay from Sony. Comparing a little bit from ATSC 1.0 to 3.0, of course, one bit rate, 19.39 dot 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 megabits per second. one coverage area, service flexibility, HD, SD, multicast, data, audio only, lots of flexibility. For ETSC 3.0 physical layer, we want to provide more bits per hertz near the theoretical limit, a flexible bit rate and coverage area, enable on-channel repeaters and multiple simultaneous physical layer pipes. So, of course, broadcasters with ATSC 1.0 have been operating with a single constrained physical layer throughput of 19.39 megabits per second since the beginning, 95. Mobile was later added. Of course, it works off that 19.39 megabit per second stream. ATSC 3.0 will have considerable flexibility in operating points with a large number of broadcast options that are available and that are very close to the Shannon limit. Trade-offs include low capacity, highly robust, or high capacity, less robust, and a lot of points in between. And speaking of Claude Shannon, I won't go into the details here other than point out here's Shannon's theoretical limit, the blue. In the red are various modes of operating modes of ATSC 3.0. For comparison purposes, DVB-T2, which is a really good system, really efficient system, is shown in green. So as you can see, it's very close to the Shannon limit. Very high performance. So broadcasters needs include flexibility, robustness, and efficiency, and we're rolling those together in ATSC 3.0. And its documentation, we'll get to this a little bit later. Documentation for the physical layer is I will almost say largely complete. That's a bit of an overstatement. It's in a very stable and advanced state. And so we're not talking about concept here. This is what it really does. Moving up to the management layer, management and protocols encompasses service delivery and synchronization, service announcement and personalization, interactive services and companion screens, and redistribution support. S33 is chaired by Dr. Young Kwan Lim from Samsung. IP transport will be used for broadcast delivery of both streaming and file content. ATSC 1, of course, uses MPEG-2, A153 ATSC mobile IP. Key elements of the management layer. Key common elements include use of ISO BMFF as a content format for streaming delivery, use of UTC for synchronization and buffer management, use of HTTP over TCP for unmanaged broadband networks. Wait a minute, that sounds a lot like the internet, doesn't it? Yes, it does, and it's not by accident. So what are the benefits of IP transport? First of all, broadcasting no longer becomes an independent silo. Broadcast and broadband can join as peer delivery mechanisms. And this gives us the opportunity to put together hybrid services and to seamlessly incorporate specific content. We're not viewing the broadcast and the wireless as two separate competitive elements. And in point of fact, they are now for sure. However, we can use the broadcast, can use the internet, and the internet can use the broadcast in ATSC 3.0 to make something that is compelling and specialized and truly unique. We want to enable new business models, and that includes localized ad insertion. So, for example, the broadcast feed has a football game. We come to the break. Some of the, depending on the selections made or by the consumer when they set up the set, or depending on their location or whatever information they may have given the television set, or whatever the television set can gain on its own because it knows its IP address and so forth. during the break, some will take the some sets can take the over-the-air commercial. Other sets can switch to a internet-delivered program and seamlessly integrated. It provides a localized ad insertion like we really could never do before. So the internet protocol-based system, of course, as I mentioned, allows broadcasting to become a part of the wireless internet. And of course, broadcasting was wireless before wireless was cool. A lot of people forget that, not in this room, but a lot of people involved in the internet. You know, one of the things that I think makes a lot of sense, very compelling argument for going with the internet protocol and going toward that direction as much as possible, is that there's an enormous global investment in IP technology, and we'll capitalize on that. Moving up a layer to the applications and presentations layer, it encompasses video coding, audio coding, presentation logic, service framework, the runtime environment, and accessibility. S34 is chaired by Madeline Nolan from LG. The 3.0 video system will support enhanced HD and UHD, hybrid broadcast broadband program delivery, like we talked about the internet, high efficiency compression, you'd expect that, multiple selectable video components are possible, like alternate camera angles and so forth, multi-view, picture-in-picture and so forth, multi-screen, so forth. Now, of course, the benefit of doing a greenfield standard is that you can start with new technologies, and there's no legacy component to overcome. As I mentioned, that yes, that has its drawbacks. It means everybody needs a new TV set, but you know, one thing at a time. So the video technologies, of course, there's, as you would expect, a general agreement on use of HEVC for video coding. Scalable video coding is being studied. It's very interesting. It's complexity, system complexity may be an issue, but we're looking at it. Video enhancements, in addition to UHD to the home, high dynamic range, higher frame rate, and wide color gamut, are very intriguing and very, I may go out on a limb here, I'd say likely to be included in the standard. No, actually, I think it's probably not on a limb. It makes so much sense. We want to deliver HD to portable devices such as tablets as well, of course. UHD is an immediate goal, 4K, the current focus, 8K, possible. Wide dynamic range, or high dynamic range, wide color gamut, so forth. This is a work in progress. What we want to do is give the broadcaster degrees of freedom with regard to video coding, and that would include the bit depth, the color space, contrast ratio, temporal resolution, and spatial resolution. Speaking of, I want to focus here on the last three on this chart, HDR, color gamut, and 10-bit. You notice from a relative standpoint in bits, it doesn't take a whole lot to implement those, and they make a big difference when it comes to the look of the image. If you've seen any of the demos at NAB or CES, you know it's HDR and color gamut and a wider palette to work with. It certainly is a benefit and something people notice right away. The audio system will feature personalization and enhanced immersive experiences. We're targeting various devices, fixed and mobile, big and small, support for, of course, audio-only content and AV. Hybrid broadcast broadband delivery here again will be a part of the system. And normalization of content loudness and contouring of dynamic range. We want to avoid the loudness problems that took us a little bit of time to solve. ATSC 3.0 audio will provide for selectable, mixable audio components where you can control the dialogue level. That's very useful for hearing impaired or even people of a certain age. Regrettably, I fear I'm at that age, but that's another thing to lament. Also, alternate audio tracks and the being there mode. This one allows viewers to select elements of the program mix to their own preference. There have been a couple of demos at, again, NAB and CES on this, and at first I was a little skeptical. Okay, I think people just want to sit and watch TV. Yeah, and I think they probably do. However, the demos of the where you give the consumer the ability to, for example, bring up or take down the network announcer, bring up or take down natural sound. This is for a sporting event. The track announcer, if you will, and it's quite compelling because you can, particularly with an immersive environment and a really nice UHD picture, you can. Set it up so it's not like you're watching TV. It's like you're there, because you've got the sound of the half pipe guy going down the track, and you've got the natural sound of the host speaker and so forth. So it's quite compelling. So immersive audio. I think I've talked about that. This is important, I think. Audio is going to be targeted to a lot of devices, as I mentioned, fixed and mobile, but also differing speaker setups and headphones, including suboptimal setups. Because we all know how a surround sound system should be set up. How it is set up can be quite another matter. Object audio is a major component of ATSC 3.0. It's a big step forward and uses objects and elements and metadata to place them in the right position. Rather than sending channels as such, we send objects and metadata, and the decoder places the sound in the most accurate position that the system's user device can accomplish, because it knows where it can determine, a smart system can determine how many speakers it has, where they're placed, more or less, and can adjust the system, the renderer, to give the most accurate portrayal of what the program producer really wanted. Again, a lot of different types of receivers are supported, large fixed screen tablets, loud headphones, and so forth. Personalization and applications is a broad subject and encompasses a lot of different technologies. It's kind of the app level, if you will. Among the things that we plan to have for ATSC 3.0, internet overlay graphics, again, hybrid delivery, broadcast broadband, dynamic ad insertion, personalized graphics, interactivity, synchronized second screen applications, immersive audio, audience measurement. That's a key thing out of the box, audience measurement. Also, advanced emergency alerting is a key element of the ATSC 3.0 system, with new public service capabilities that include a robust EAS wake-up signal, advanced messaging, the ability to send rich media, maps, files, video clips, so forth. Of course, we want to and need to reach indoor locations and battery-powered devices. This builds on the work done on mobile EAS by ATSC. Accessibility, of course, is a key component, a fundamental element of the new system. There are new public service capabilities that are being developed. Robust audio and closed caption transmission, even when the picture fails. Improved audio intelligibility for the hearing impaired. New capabilities for improved dialogue and continued support for video description services. You'll hear a lot as time goes by with regard to ATSC about candidate standards. And a candidate standard is a classification of documents wherein it's received significant review within the specialist group. We think it's baked. We think it's ready to go. However, we want to send it out to a larger group, to the public group, for implementation experience. And then as those implementations are done, feedback comes back saying, this works great, you don't need to change anything, or I didn't understand what you meant by this, or this didn't work, we need to fix it. When you're writing a standard, the writers know what they mean, but someone reading it cold may not. And so the candidate standard phase is where we sort out those issues. Two documents have been elevated to candidate standard. Ballots are pending for four others. The first document at candidate standard is A321. All of the, by the way, all of the ATSC 3.0 documents have 300XX or 3XX numbering. A321 system discovery and signaling. This is that bottom layer of the system diagram that I showed you previously. It's the bootstrap signal. It provides a universal entry point into the waveform. This is a new concept for ATSC and for television in general, I think. This capability ensures that broadcast spectrum can be adapted to carry new services and or waveforms. So it's out there, it's available for anybody who wants to implement it. A322 is a physical layer standard. It describes the RF transmission system. And as I mentioned previously, it enables flexible configurations of the physical layer resources. A lot of different operating modes, very flexible, very complex, but very flexible. Allows broadcasters to choose from a wide variety of parameters to address their particular needs. There are four additional documents that will go to ballot as a candidate standard soon. Actually, A322 went out a couple days ago. Assuming approval, these will be available on the ATSC website in late November. All ATSC standards and recommended practices are available at no charge for download from the website. ATSC 3.0 is documented as a suite of standards, and actually a large number of them. There's a top-level parent standard, we're going to call it A300, describes the overall system and specifies what do you need to do in order to have an ATSC 3.0 emission. Now, ATSC 3.0 A300 will point to a suite of about 20 standards, and they're listed here on the right. As you can see, there's a lot of, if we have two at candidate standard and four ballot pending, we still have a lot of work that's in progress. So the path to ATSC 3.0 began in 2010, actually a little before that. We've done the planning, we've done the requirements. We are well into doing the development and standards coming very soon. It's hard to predict the future, and so setting the schedule, we have our own internal schedules that I think we're doing a really good job of meeting, but what we can say for certain is that, of course, it will be a suite of standards. Each one will move through the process at its own pace. Some are slam dunk easy, some are very complicated, and for example, A322, the physical layer standard, 250 pages of very technical stuff. And that takes a long time to do and a long time, a lot of work to implement and so forth. So we can't say that at a particular date, everything's going to be done because there are some unknowns. However, we'll move most to candidate standard this year or early next year. Certainly by NAB, we hope to have all the candidate standards published. Final approval of each document is expected sometime next year with completion of everything in 2017. So please invite me back in 2017 and you can give me a grade on how well we did. So we have a lot of work to do, but like I mentioned, in the 2 years since I was here last, all of this has been done. When I was here 2 years ago, we hadn't put any words down on paper other than to determine what it is we want to do. Of course, that was a major task as well. And that involved a lot of people, a lot of smart people spending a lot of time. But what we have to do now is complete the standard, well, standards. Working drafts are under development. More candidate standards are expected to be published this year. We encourage industry feedback as implementation is gained, and you'll see, I'm sure, a number of demos at NAB and most likely at CES as well. Now, the candidate standard is not the end of the line with regard to our process. Once a document is elevated to candidate standard, then there's a specific CS period, if you will, usually 6 months, 9 months, or so forth, where that implementation experience is gained. And then at that point, if it's fully baked and everybody agrees, okay, this is the done deal. We got it right. Then it goes to another ballot of technology group three, which was the top of the chart that I did near the beginning. And then assuming that's approved at the technology group level, then it goes on to the membership level, and then it's published as a standard. So there's a process here, but we're in the phase where the real heavy lifting is happening, because this is where we're creating the technology, creating the technology, documenting the technology, and certainly creating the documentation. Okay, so in summary, ATSC 3.0 will not be backward compatible to the legacy system. It acknowledges the changes of user environments and needs. It understands the broadcast spectrum regulatory issues that are out there. It supports viability and new business models for broadcasters, and it is flexible to accommodate future improvements and developments. I'd like to thank the folks who contributed to this, Mark Richer, Glenn Reitmeier, Rich Chernock. And I'd also invite anybody who is interested in receiving the ATSC newsletter, the standard, to visit the ATSC.org website. There's a link. Just give us your email address, enter that, and you'll get a copy of the newsletter once a month. We won't bug you for anything else, but it's a good way to keep up on what's going on with ATSC. And so with that, I am happy to entertain any questions.
Hi, Jerry. Thank you. Good presentation. I wonder if, since this is a forklift upgrade, essentially, you know, you have to get viewer buy-in, and the general public has shown that unless you can show them a huge wow, like an iWatch or something like that, you know, they don't pay a lot of attention. Is there any group within your organization, and if not there, maybe outside of your organization, that's working on a marketing plan and a transition plan for this? And the second part of the question is, it seems probably unintentional, but your timeline seems to be working along with the pretty much the same as the auction timeline. Is that just coincidence, or is there some planning there?
It's undeniable that there are spectrum challenges and spectrum-related issues in the U.S., and that's driving a lot of consideration for where do we go from here. It's not just the U.S. There's spectrum, there's the desire for spectrum reallocation in other countries. I'll defer to Jay and Wayne, who will follow up. I'll let them answer the question from my standpoint with regard to the timeline and how it seems to be aligned with what with the spectrum auction activity. I'll just say that there's we've realized from the beginning when we started the project that timeliness was very important. There are factors that are outside of our control. And what regulatory agencies do is certainly one of those things that's outside of our control. And so if it turns out that they seem to mesh, and if that's helpful in some way, great. But we've set the schedule based on what we thought was accomplishable and to get the job done right. Let's see, the transition, there is a... there has been a considerable discussion at the ATSC board level on a transition strategy. That's not something that we would have any standardization activity in, or even a recommended practice in. But that's a board level activity. I know that there has been progress with regard to what are the scenarios, how do we get from where we are now to where we want to be. That is under discussion. The marketing aspect, it's not that's outside of ATSC's wheelhouse. However, There are certainly broadcaster groups that that are very involved in ATSC 3.0, and one would imagine that they've looked at business and marketing aspects as well. So I think there's preliminary activity on that point now. We'll see more as we have something to show consumers. And you're right, we have to wow them. They have to look at it and think, I got to have this. That's the way it has to work. Yes.
Well, thank you, Jerry, for the presentation. It's always very interesting. The one question I have is how will this work with other service providers such as cable or DBS, UVerse, that type of thing? Will they just pass the signal through, or are they going to manipulate it so some of the features won't be available?
The MVPD operators, cable, satellite, so forth, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say all the major players are involved in ATSC and involved in work on ATSC 3.0. Certainly NCTA is. We are working with those organizations, with the cable satellite organizations and companies, to make sure that what we do will fit into to their plant and their operating model. For example, with signaling and I think they see this as a good opportunity for them as well. So it's there are certainly challenges to become overcome. One of the technologies that we're looking at is watermarking as a way to get a signal from the broadcast a particular command, if you will, from a broadcaster over to a television set, not just through the content provider, the cable company or satellite, but also through the HDMI cable. So it's a complex process, but all the players are at the table, and they all realize that it's got to work for everybody. It's got to work for the broadcasters, and it's got to work for the cable and satellite companies.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.